I remember the day Richie shared his vision with me. He said, I think what this area is missing is a arcade, like an actual place where people can come, play video games, have fun, and you know, nothing matters. It's just kind of like it was when we were kids growing up, you know?
These games were everything back in the 80s. It's the coolest thing we ever seen.
One game turned into another, which turned into another, and then another. And the games had completely taken over the house.
At one point, my wife said, you know what, we should share this.
His superstar was born.
When you come to Richie Knuckles Arcade, it's as if you went into a time portal.
An arcade will fall.
You don't want to know, Faithy. You don't want to know.
A hero will rise.
Hundreds of classic arcade gamers flock to Richie Knuckles Arcade this weekend.
The King of Arcades video game documentary is in prime position to steal our love and attention.
Nothing should ever stop you. Every obstacle is an opportunity.
I love when filmmakers go to unexpected places and find stories that grab you and don't let go. Starring Ralph H. Baer.
People just have no feeling for how magic all this stuff is.
Walter Day.
I want you to appreciate that this is not an average situation.
Eugene Jarvis. Billy Mitchell. And Richie Knuckles. The King of Arcade.
But the most impressive part of this to me is there's an arcade in New Jersey that still has a Q-Bert machine.
The Richie Knuckles Arcade, one of the biggest arcade phenomena, most likely in the world.
Welcome to the Obsolete Gamer Show. I am J.A. Lenoir. This is where the gamers come to talk. And in fact, for this season, it's going to be where the retro gamers come to talk. And we're proud to have, for our first guest for this new season, Richie Knuckles. You'll know him from King of the Arcades. Thanks for joining us today.
Yo!
So I've been looking over like some of your older interviews and the ones in print and also the ones in video. And I'm just curious, like, I know everyone always starts with the arcade, so I guess I have to start with that, too, because I have a lot of questions, more not so about, like, building an arcade, because I know that people that know about you have read about, like, how you put the arcade together, but overall, like, just the idea of, I remember people talking about going into arcades and putting the coin on the screen and lining up, and people would be, like, after work going in there, you know, you'd have a kid next to a person in a business suit. From your experience, has that changed? I mean, obviously there's less and less arcades, but like for yours, like what kind of clientele is it? Is it someone just likes retro gaming, or is it people just a mixture of people that just like gaming in general, just curious about this arcade?
Well, for the most part, it's probably guys my age in their 30s, 40s, and 50s that either want to relive the experience for themselves or they want to show it to their children. Show it to their nephew, their niece, or the nephew, because I tried to make the arcade as close to an 80s arcade as I could. The newest game I think we had in there, combat. So everything Mortal Kombat and prior, Street Fighter Mortal Kombat was sort of the cutoff, and everything before that. And it really felt like an 80s arcade. And most of the time it was people my age trying to relive that experience where there'd be a social aspect to playing video games. And there was also the people that were, you know, as like gamers that just wanted to come and have a nice casual night out, maybe throw Pac-Man around the screen a little bit, talk to their friends, and then bolt. So it was a good mix. But most of the time it was the people that really loved these games as a kid and wanted to be transformed back to that experience of what an 80s arcade was like.
When deciding to put together like what you're going to put into the arcade, because obviously, like you said, you didn't do modern games. Was it just a matter of just starting with like classics? Was there things that you said, no, I don't think I want to put this game in here either because you thought it won't be popular enough? Or was it really anything that you could get your hands on?
I tried to replicate my experience. I brought in probably the first 20 games I got were my first 20 games that I got into and played. Like when I was a kid, I played Phoenix. I played Pole Position. I played Space Invaders. I played Monaco GP. I played games like that. And I Punch Out. And I went out in Donkey Kong. I went out and just got all those games that selfish. Games I was good at. Games I enjoyed. And then after we became a business, then I started listening to the customers. Hey, you don't have a Neo Geo in here. You need a Neo Geo. Or you don't have, say, a Street Fighter Champion Edition instead of Street Fighter blah, blah, blah. Because the fighting games wasn't really my experience was as a kid. But I enjoyed Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat. But after that, I didn't really get into the fighting games as much. So then I had the customers sort of help me out and say, oh, no, you got to get Tekken. You got to get Killer Instinct. And then slowly I got into that as well after I started to learn it a little bit more. So that anything that was a little bit newer than Mortal Kombat, I learned during my experience of running the arcade. Everything prior to that, I knew I was an expert already. I've been collecting these games since I was 19.
Can you tell us a little bit about your arcade experience? Because I've talked to people who, you know, for them, it was about going in and finding someone to play against. So for them, it was versing games. For others, it was just a stress relief where they just went in there and they had their favorite games. What was it like for you going into arcades growing up?
Well, I was born at the perfect year. Perfect. The arcade experience couldn't have been any better for my age. I was born so that when I turned 10, the explosion hit. So at my daughter's age, 10 or 11, the explosion hit, meaning that I went from never seeing what an arcade game was. Like my parents didn't take us to places where I could see the shooter games, the electromechanical shooter games. My parents didn't take us anywhere where I'd see a pinball machine. They just weren't around. You'd have to go to special places. I had never witnessed arcade games type things. And then I was in a bowling league, and in the bowling alley, they brought in a Space Invaders and a Monaco GP. I was hooked. I actually currently, the two games that I'm really good at is Space Invaders and Monaco GP.
Is it one of those things where it's just to get good at arcade games? I mean, there's games I've been able to put in and eventually get better. I remember Spy Hunter was one of those where at first...
Not Spy Hunter.
And the cool one is the arcade I went to, it had one where you would sit inside, so that was even cooler. And what would happen is...
There's a Spy Hunter around here somewhere.
Oh, you got that too? Nice.
Yeah, it's around here somewhere.
But it was one of those things where at first I would get killed as soon as I ran out of my little specials. And little by little, I would get better at dodging the cars and knowing when to use my specials to take them out, like the slick and stuff like that. Is that the same thing with you? It's just repetition? Because every time I see a documentary, it seems like that's what it is. You got to keep playing and learning timing and everything like that so you could get better.
Yeah, exactly. The more that you play, the little nuances you learn, the patterns you pick up. What I love about Donkey Kong is you get to a certain spot and then you have the breakthrough game when it clicks, everything clicks. And then you know what you have to do to get better. And the only way you can get that is through dumping quarters in a machine, you know, just playing and playing and playing and playing and playing. And that's what we did. That's what we do. I mean, my whole existence from 10 until 13, I'd say it probably lasted probably 2 or 3 years, that all I wanted to do was just be in the arcade. That's penny I made went to quarters. It's just the way it was. And it was a perfect age for me because I wasn't the only one. It wasn't like I was the punk rocker of the school and everybody made fun of me because I skated and had a mohawk. Everybody I knew loved the arcade games. It wasn't like it was just a click. It was, you know, from grandma all the way to your baby brother. Everybody loved them.
Now, considering the people that you said that ends up going to the arcade, usually you said like the older people, you know, not old, 30 isn't old, 30, 40 isn't old, but just older than maybe a teenager. I know that, as I was saying before, there's some games that just destroy me, especially like when you're playing modern games and then you say, I want to load up some retro gaming, and you go and you realize, wow, I can't even get off this stage. Do you ever see that where someone comes in and maybe they're like looking for that nostalgia and all of a sudden they get hit in the face with like, wow, this game is hard. I just lost my quarter in 30 seconds.
Yeah, Dragon's Lair and Defender were two games that people came in and would go, I was never too good at this game. They'd walk up to it and play it, and they look back at me 5 seconds later and go, yep, still not good. Yeah, absolutely. But the two that come to mind are Defender and Dragon's Lair, of course. But then, again, there are the people that are really good at Dragon's Lair, and Dragon's Lair is very popular because the people that are really good at it always have a complex. Good at Dragon's Lair has a complex. They want everybody to look at me. Like, you get to the dragon, and that guy, if you're a Dragon's Lair player and you get the dragon, there's no way you're not looking around to see if anybody's watching. You know, that's exactly, that's just the first thing. If you watch on the video someone playing Dragon's Lair, as soon as they get to the dragon, everybody's like, look, is anybody watching me? Oh, this sucks. Is no one watching me? What's the sense of even being here? Is no one seeing Daphne? You know?
That is true. That idea of having people surrounding you. I remember when one of the arcades I went to first installed like this Kinect system where it would connect with their sister arcade. And I mean, these were like more modern games. I think this is like X-Men versus Street Fighter, but what it did is it allowed you to play with someone at that other arcade. And this was still before, you know, you had Xbox Kinect and all that stuff. But it was really interesting, like even before that, just to see where when you saw somebody doing something special in a game, you would get that group. And some people would go to our arcade and just watch, to the point where some arcades would actually even say, hey, listen, I appreciate you guys coming in to watch, but you got to at least spend or buy, you know, 4 tokens or something. But people would just go watch people play games, which is surprising that sometimes people complain about people watching video games on YouTube or Twitch streams when people have been doing that since, what, 70s, 80s?
Yeah, you know, you can't really, that's a good subject to bring up, is there's a lot of secrets that we learned as kids that we didn't want to see someone else learn our technique because then they could get better. But Punch-Out, for a perfect example, Punch-Out. I'm able to play Punch-Out forever. If it's on the default settings, I could marathon Punch-Out. The whole reason I was able to do that is from watching the older kids. You know, I'd sneak out of school, go watch the older kids play Punch-Out. I just followed what they did. So there's no difference between what I did as a kid than going online and watching somebody's INP or whatever it is. It's just, at some point, it ruins it. As a kid, going to the arcade and watching over someone's shoulder and then learning it for yourself was a great feeling. I don't see how going on YouTube or going on Google and writing down the moves for Dragon's Lair to get to the end, I don't find any, how that could be fun. So I had to learn it from the way I did in the old days with my friends, of having people come into the arcade. Two guys I think of are Andy and Rick that actually taught me the moves, how to get to the end on Dragon's Lair. And the day that I broke down and went to Yahoo and said, all right, what's the solve? How to solve this last puzzle? Afterwards, I just felt dirty.
I remember they had the 1-800 lines that you could call. Sometimes Nintendo had one, and it was to the point where I couldn't beat. It was one of the Mario Brothers or something. I just couldn't get it, and I ended up calling, and they told me, and then I felt so stupid when they told me the answer. Yeah. So yeah. I completely understand that. Just observing people overall, it's kind of interesting when you talked about how, you know, the Dragon's Lair player would get to the dragon, want people to watch. Have you ever, I guess, seen like maybe types, you know, I know people don't want to like, you know, put labels on some, but I'm saying just more like funny, where maybe you have the serious gamer. That's the guy who comes in, he has his quarters and he's locked into the game. And then maybe you have the floater who has 1 token for each game. Like just observing over time, people that came to our arcade, were there like characters or labels of types of gamers that you observed?
Oh my God. I don't know if I'd label them, but there were characters. You got the really, really stinky ones. The ones that haven't showered or brushed your teeth in a year. Then, of course, you got the ones that love to talk. Like you're trying to play. Say I'm trying to play Space Invaders. I'm trying to count the shots so I can get the 300 points for every saucer. And there'll be a guy over your shoulder who just wants to talk and talk and talk. And then I'm not dissing anybody's interests, but they'd be always talking about something I don't give a crap about. Like Harry Potter, you know, like I don't give a crap about Harry Potter. Shut up. I want to play this game. I'm here to play the game. So yeah, you got people that, you know, that just want to talk your ear off. And then you got the guys that are focused. Like we had this one guy and he would come in from Philadelphia every single weekend and just play Defender. He He'd walk over to the Defender machine and just stand at that machine for 4 hours and play Defender. He'd write at the end of the night, he'd write down what his high score was, and he'd go home. Wouldn't say hello to me, wouldn't talk to me, never once became friends. And I must have seen him every weekend for 2 years. Finally, after 2 years, I had to ask him his name. And his name was Mike, Defender Mike. Defender Mike brought his girlfriend in the next weekend. Biggest mistake I ever made was introducing myself to Defender Mike. He came in with his girlfriend. His girlfriend complained the whole time. I want to go. 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 He just wanted to play Defender. I'd never seen Defender Mike again. So by me introducing myself to him, I guess he felt, hey, we're kind of friends now. I'll bring my girlfriend in. And he's never been back since. So I never seen him again.
You know, it's funny. That's actually a good transition, because one of the interviews that I was reading about that you had is the interviewer is talking about like the idea of the gamer in mom's basement. And you were saying how, you know, it's not that you're necessarily wanting to change labels, but you just want to show that there's all types of gamers. And yeah, like you said, you could have someone that comes in that, you know, needs a shower, but then there's, you know, the person that comes in that, you know, has the family, plays sports, you know, is social. Can you just tell us a little bit about that, about labels and the fact that, you know, there's so many types of gamers. Obviously, you've seen that in your arcade and in your life.
Yeah, that, you know, it's funny. The quote, I don't even remember who I originally said the quote to, but I did make it up and it follows me through every single interview. The quote that I said that I don't want to be that guy that's on his couch in his tighty whities eating Cheetos and the controller's all orange. I enjoy the social aspect of going out and playing arcade games, video games with your friends. I enjoy the interaction that I have with my daughter and my daughter and I playing together. I love the interaction of my daughter making friends. Like she just recently, Faith is 11, and she just recently went with me to Free Play Florida. Free Play Florida, fantastic event. And she made close to a dozen friends, all kids ranging from like 7 all the way probably to 15. And she just had such a great time watching her enjoy all these old games with a group of girls and boys, mostly girls though, that were enjoying the games just as much. I mean, they were trying to learn. Faith was teaching the one girl moves on Dragon's Lair, and then the other girl is teaching her a game she had never seen before that was sort of like ice cold beer, that kind of game. It was great. It just and of course, all the friends that you make. I've made so many friends in this hobby. Something I like to brag about, I do the Kong off a lot. I'm the guy who founded the Kong Off, the Donkey Kong World Championships. I just recently got back from Australia.
Nice.
For doing the Kong Off in Australia at a place called the Netherworld Arcade. If you're ever in Australia and you want to check out our bar arcade, greatest one ever, it's called the Netherworld Arcade. And we just did a Donkey Kong competition there. Donkey Kong afforded me to see Australia.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody else that could say that.
Yeah, exactly. And what's really interesting is not only looking at documentaries, but just trying to study gaming. I'm not no expert, but I like to like read about how things have changed, because, you know, they talked about how arcade, it would be like almost in a nondescript area way back in the 80s, even the early 70s, late 70s. And you would go in and it's like you played these games. It was all men and it was like usually older people too, and it was locked away. And then for a long time, you were a nerd if you played games. They put everything together, whether it was tabletop or video games. And then it starts to expand. And now, like in one of the interviews, you were talking about how, and we know it's true that, you know, video games bigger than movies. Movies have moved their release because of video games. Retro gaming is big right now. People going out and getting retro games. Just in your experience, how have you observed just the changing from where people may have looked at video games and almost been ashamed to talk about it, where it's everywhere in our lives?
It's kind of funny. I say that, and I don't want to make anyone mad at me about this, but I loved the arcade. Was like my thing. I was really good at a bunch of games. I spent my whole entire life growing up in the arcades, and then I discovered girls. Space Invaders, Nintendo, Atari, everything out the window, just in the box in the attic. Never touched a video game again, because in my world, what I saw was, if you're into video games, and you're dating the hottest girl in school, you don't tell your girlfriend that you like video games. You just don't tell her. You hide that from her. I got into a band. We went on tour. We had Xbox, Tony Hawk Pro Skater, whatever. Well, one of the first ones. I remember the band Millencolin. No Cigar was one of the songs that was in it. Heard it the whole time. I drove the van. I didn't touch that controller one time. Never even picked it. I never played Xbox once on the whole 3-month tour. That's how much I wasn't into video games. In my brain, if you wanted to get girls and you admitted you were a gamer, you weren't getting the girl. That's just the way my brain saw it. Then after the band broke up and I got older, I started to, somebody said to me, hey, have you heard this program called MAME? You know, and I think it was on MAME, like it was like one of the first releases. It was way back when. I mean, it was like in the 90s. When someone introduced me to MAME, I remember going into work and having it on my laptop, and I was playing Phoenix, trying to recreate the three bird trick at work on my laptop, showing my friends at work. And then after I discovered MAME, I just was like, oh my God, I got to get back into this. It's been a long time. And believe it or not, I had bought for my house, I bought a punch out machine for my basement, but that punch out machine sat in my basement. I mean, I've turned it on maybe twice a year until somebody introduced me to MAME. And that's when I got the bug again. I got the punch out, then I got a Monaco GP and a Space Invaders. And after I bought those three games and put them in my basement, it was all over. I was back in again. I don't, you know, back into video games, but both feet. So it was cool again for me.
Another interview that I saw that you had with Nintendo Life, you were talking about how when people compete, at least as far as retro gaming, you know, it's a competition, but it's positive and it's about having social interaction, wanting to make friends. And it's interesting because now with how pro gaming has blown up as far as games like League of Legends, Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, all that stuff, sometimes you get that disconnect where people want to make it almost like it's a real anger, like an adversary. While the other sides are like, no, it's still supposed to be, yeah, you may play against your friend, you want to kick his butt, but in the end, it's to either make friends or enhance the friendship.
I don't see any rivalries or competitive, like if someone is competing on a game, I don't know anybody that's a rival and doesn't like each other. At the end of the day, they shake hands and everybody's friends. So that part of it, I don't see it all. And I'm talking about in the retro gaming scene, you know, what I'm in the thicket of. I don't see anybody that are rivals, but I see a lot of jealousy from gamers that want attention from, say, the media, or they want to be an internet personality. There's a lot of jealousy in that, but not per se in the games. Like the playing, like the best player in Space Invaders is from Australia now, this guy, John. He and I are like the best of friends. I love that kid. We talk all the time online. I'm glad that he's playing Space Invaders and that he's getting better and is better than I am. I'm glad because it makes me want to play again and have fun again. When it comes to mind, the people that don't like me personally that I met and I don't like as much are only the people that are looking for the spotlight. The people that want to be able to go onto YouTube and have a viral video, or they want to go online and talk shit and have everybody talking chatter on the internet about them because they're starting up crap. It's all about attention. That's really the only rivalries I see is in the whole social media. Me, 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 look at me. That's really the only problems that we have in the community. Other than that, everybody gets along great. Everybody's good friends. We all enjoy being together. Why we travel from New Jersey to Australia to California to Florida, all in 3 weeks. Every one of those towns I went to was to go to either California Extreme, go to the Netherworld Kong Off, go to the Pinball Museum with John Weiss's place called Arcade Expo, go down to Free Play Florida. I did all that in less than 4 weeks.
Wow.
And I saw my friends.
Would you say it's similar to music? You know, you've been involved with music in a band that, you know, you can say to yourself, yeah, it'd be nice if I could play here or be featured here. But it starts with you love music, you love performing, you love playing. Same thing with gaming, that you love these games, you love playing, you love the interaction. And hey, sure, it'd be nice if I show up here, but that's not that, that's not number one in your mind. And I think that in that case, it comes out more authentic and you're more, no matter what happens, you have fun. You play a game, you're not looking and saying, why didn't I get on here? You're just like, I had a great time playing this game.
The music experience is totally different for everybody. My musical experience was I love to sing. I love to write songs. I love to perform. I was once, when we were on tour, they once described me in Maximum Rock and Roll, which is huge magazine, huge publication. And they described me as the front man, David Lee Roth meets Meatloaf. I thought that was pretty funny because both of those guys are very energetic front man and entertain. My musical experience would be different than from somebody completely different because I actually wrote my own music, formed my own band, went out there for years and pounded pavement and tried to make it in the music industry. I failed miserably, but I have so many good memories. I have so many good songs that I'm proud of. I still listen to some of my songs today and I still sing in the car. I love to sing. Was I a failure? Yeah, we didn't make it, but you know, who does make it? It's like hitting a lottery, making it in the music business. With the arcade business, it's completely different. Is you get exactly out of it what you put into it when it comes to the arcade industry, what I'm doing. The more I put into it, the more I get out of it. It depends on what you want. Do you want to just go and be good at every game and have people talk about how great you are at gaming? Or do you want to go out and enjoy the friendships you make, make a difference, give back to the community? Or is it all about you? Is it, you know, like a narcissist? Look how great I am. It all depends on what you're trying to get out of it. For me, the more I put in, the more I get out. And the friendships I've made, I've made so many more friendships in the gaming community than I ever did in the music industry.
What was interesting that I also read, in 2011, you were talking with Nintendo Life and they were asking you about just gaming community together and how gaming is like blowing up and being more popular. And you spoke about how it could be so difficult to get, you know, gamers and community to work together, to do things together. Cause either maybe everybody wants to work on their own or there's too many egos involved, but if everyone worked together, then it could make the community overall stronger and more lucrative for everybody.
I think that did happen. I think that did. I think we have succeeded in that way. When I first opened my place, I was one of maybe four arcades that featured only classic arcades. You look now, every city in the United States has like three barcades now. There's probably quadrupled, if not 1,000 times, it blew up in places that you can go play classic arcade games. When I started, I bought a building to become a barcade back in the late 90s. There was nothing like it. I just got done on tour. There wasn't a single barcade on the planet. There was none. We toured the entire country. There was nothing. My idea was to open up a place where you could hear live music, drink beer, play Texas Hold'em, and then on the fourth floor, the four-story hotel, on the fourth floor would be the Retro Arcade. That was the plan. Had $2 million invested in this project with me and a couple other people. It wasn't all my money. It was four of us. We jointly were going to do it. After buying the building, within a month, 2 months, we had a huge flood. And it was right on the river, and the building went two stories underwater. Ooh. Destroyed, and I had equipment in there already.
Oh my God.
Destroyed a lot of equipment. It was sad. So sold the building.
Sorry.
Sold the building, lost a lot of money, and then just returned a few years later to open Richie Knuckles Arcade without the beer. No license. I couldn't afford it after that.
Yeah, it's true. Here in Miami, they have, it's like a restaurant that is game oriented. And when you're on the first floor, you can eat and play board games. And on the second floor, they have video games, including some retro gaming. So, and they have one in Orlando too. So like you said, it's one of those things where at first it was not that popular or arcades was dying out and now people want it back again. And another thing, like I was saying before, retro gaming is one of those things, as far as even collecting has gotten popular, where you know, people are going out and going to Goodwills and secondhand stores and garage sales to find these classic games, either from consoles or even arcade machines. For you, just seeing that, like all these people getting into retro gaming, especially like really young people, how does that make you feel to see that?
I've, you know, 100%. Well, for one, financially, I'm not breaking any banks. Trust me. Money is not what drives me. I have in this room right now, we're looking at right here. I probably have $2 million worth of arcade games, video games, and parts in this room right now. If I stood up and showed you, just everywhere you can go, you can't even walk. It's packed with arcade games, pinball machines, arcade games. The pinball machines I bought, my investment probably at least 10 times. Like if I bought a pinball machine for $1,000, I'd get $3,000 for it now. Or like one of my pinball machines I bought for $500, I'd get $5,000 for it now. 15 years later, pinball blew up. Arcade games, which we all thought would never blow up, used to be able to get a Pac-Man or a Donkey Kong for $100, $200. I paid $150 for my Punch-Out. And that was the norm. That was the norm. Now, and I think I have a lot to do with this, you can't get a Donkey Kong for under $1,300. That works and is nice. Nowhere. And if anybody out there wants to sell me their Donkey Kong for $700, I'll buy them all day long. Anybody that's watching this has the Donkey Kong for sale, $700. I'll buy it right now. That's right at the bargain basement price. $1,000 to $1,500 is what you're going to pay now to get a Donkey Kong. And I think probably the reason was I've bought and sold close to 100 Donkey Kongs in the last 5 years. Definitely drove the price of Donkey Kongs up.
Oh, man. It's like cornering the market on Donkey Kongs.
I got 20 of them right over there.
Wow. So I saw that you also have a Twitch channel. So normally, what do you show on your channel?
Oh, my God. I haven't used it in so long. Sometimes I just play Donkey Kong on it and stream playing Donkey Kong. But back in the day, way before anybody was a Twitch player, it was when it was called Justin TV. I used to do a web show, but an interactive web show where I'd bring Billy Mitchell on, I'd bring Steve Wiebe on, Walter Day came on, Todd Rogers, everybody that was a celebrity in the gaming world, I'd bring them to my arcade, sit them in the hot seat, and do like a Johnny Carson type, you know, David Letterman show with them. And we were getting, no exaggeration, I think I had close to 200,000 views in the course of 3 months. And the numbers are all there, but that all happened over the skip span of maybe only 3-4 months. But the chat room, how I could tell that we were doing something is the chat room, you couldn't keep up. You know, when you try to read the chat, you type something, it would be gone. As soon as you're reading it, it was going so fast, you couldn't read it. So that's when I knew we were onto something. We recently, I was at a thing out in California. It was the Twin Galaxies competition on the NES. I don't know if you heard about it. Twin Galaxies did some kind of competition at my friend John Weeks's pinball arcade museum. And the guy who owns Twin Galaxies was trying to tell me that there's 100,000 people watching. So I go over and I look at the stream, and the chat room wasn't even moving. I mean, not even moving. Someone wrote, "What's his score?" And it was like 15 minutes ago. No one answered the guy. I said, "And there's how many thousands of people watching right now?" And, you know, the guy, I'm not going to say his name. The guy said, "Oh, my God, we got hundreds of thousands of people watching right now." And I'm just thinking to myself, I'm like, you know, that's what's the wrong with the gaming right now is the way people are always trying to jack up their numbers, their social media numbers. That's not what it's about. It's about how many people are in that crowd watching Vince LeMay take his shirt off as he's getting a kill screen on Donkey Kong. It's about Steve Wiebe on my shoulders slapping high five to a crowd of 100 to 200 people, all slapping him high five as I carry him around the arcade on my shoulders. That's the moments that give me goosebumps. I got him right now from thinking about it.
One of the things that I wasn't able to really learn that much about is that you were back in the day were working on a television show that was actually going to deal with retro gaming. Is that correct?
We still are. We still are. I have a bunch of episodes that we've already filmed, professional. And we're just shopping it. You know, the time's just not right yet. Hopefully the time will be right soon, because I've got a lot of heavy hitters in my corner. Hasn't paid off yet.
It seems like it kind of, it's hard on television, because I remember when you had like the G4 TV and all that, and it seemed as if, you know, that was picking up steam for a while, and then that faded out. And they've tried like different types of TV shows. The only one that I guess really is still there is the one on AMC, where it's, you know, it's more about, I guess, comic books than anything else. But you would think that that would be something that would be interesting. Or is it maybe the disconnect that gamers end up wanting to watch things on their computers or on their Xbox more than television?
Well, you know, I think it's going to come to the point, too, that we don't need a major network to pick it up on television. I think technology is going to keep going, so that if someone like me or you started our own YouTube channel and we're putting out really good content, eventually the word's going to spread. It's just got to be the person with the right personality, the person with the time, and the person to be able to create fun content. All those formulas put together, who needs a major network? We got YouTube. You can do it on YouTube. This, what, my daughter Faith is watching Dan DTM, the diamond minecart guy. The guy makes like $60 million a year, that dude, just by playing Minecraft. And it's because it's a fad that all the little kids tapped into. Well, you know what? We have a fad that is going to last a lot longer than that fad. Every day, someone new is tapping into it. Someone new contacts me every day and says something. I'm talking, I don't get, and again, I'm going to come across sounding cocky, but I get a fan mail letter, not handwritten in the mail, but through the Facebook messaging or whatever. I get at least one or two a day, every single day, that just say something kind. I did, and I don't know how I'm doing it. Knock on wood. I'm sure there's haters out there. I get no hate mail. Might mean I'm doing something wrong, but in a way, it makes me happy because my daughter can read it. And if someone writes me hate mail and my daughter reads it, it may really upset me. But most of the time, it's everyone saying, thank you for bringing back this culture and making it cool again. Thank you for that. And I'm, you know, of course, right now I'm probably sounding like a real buffoon saying this, because that means I think I'm cool. But hey, when you got it, flaunt it.
Hey, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with having the personality and trying to bring up gaming. Because, I mean, like I said, for so long, gaming has been pushed down where it's like, you know, stay in that corner, stay in that basement. And then next thing you know, you even had Hollywood people trying to pretend like they're gamers to try and fit in and get the gamers' attention. So, you know, it's like we don't want to be bitter about it, but there's nothing wrong with, you know, when you see some people get a little bit of fame to, you know, be like, hey, listen, after all this years of suffering, it's nice to actually be recognized and people are able to make money off of that. It used to be the joke, like, oh, you want gaming, you're wasting your life. And now you have careers, whether it's in an actual software developing or something, or like you said, doing your own thing with Twitch and YouTube and things like that.
Hopefully one day my finances will come together properly so that I can produce the content, the show that I want to produce and put it out. Just right now, I'm so focused on trying just to keep a roof over my head. I have, like I said, here, I'll show you real quick. I don't know if my camera's big enough.
Let's see which one is it.
Oh, nice. Nice, see something.
It changed over to the wrong camera. All right.
Oh, so okay.
This one you might be able to see a little bit. Let's see. All right, there you go. All right. See all those games?
Oh, wow.
That's a lot of freaking games, right?
Yes, it is.
All right, let me get you back to the other camera. I'm getting good at this now. All right. So what I basically did was switch cameras. Let's see. You.
Yep,
all right, now we got that camera. We could use the front camera. Hey. Or we could go back to the run that we were using before. And that one was which one? Oh, that's the one I unplugged. Oh, shit. That's what happened. I unplugged the camera. All right, you're going to have to look at me on this angle then.
No problem. I was going to say, as far as out of all these games that you play, is there just one that, let's say it's there and it's on, you would just gravitate to?
Say that again.
If there's like one game, like of all the arcade cabinets that you have, and you like, let's say you walk in there, is there one that you know you'd always just gravitate to play?
Probably Pole Position. If they have a Pole Position, I'll always play that because that's a really, really fun game. I always gravitate to Donkey Kong because I want to see put, you know, if the high score in the place is only like 500,000-600,000, I could beat that. So I want to play that. And right now I'm actually in a renaissance of pinball. I've been playing a lot of pinball.
Oh, nice. All right. So we always ask our guests this. If you were on a, let's say you were on an island, you had food, you had things like that, but you also had to pick one video game that you would have to play for the end of time that you're on that island, which one would you select?
That's a tough one. I guess Donkey Kong. Why? Because then if I had all the time in the world, I'd be able to beat Robbie Lakeman.
So what's coming up next for you?
Kong Off 6 in Banning, California. That is at my, I mentioned him a few times. John Weeks owns the pinball museum in Banning, California. And it's called Arcade Expo. So we're doing the Kong Off 6 there. And that's in March.
Nice. Very nice. Well, I just want to thank you for coming on and talking with us. You know, we love talking to people who are into retro gaming. So we'd love to be able to talk to you more in the future.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Hell yeah.
Awesome.
Anytime. If you want to co-host, let me know.
Oh, definitely. So... thanks, everybody, for watching us. And, of course, thanks to Richie Knuckles for joining us today. We'll be back very soon for another episode of Obsolete Gamer Show. Thanks again. Hey, guys, listen. You like the games? You like the interviews? You like the shows? How about you click on that subscribe button and also give us a like? We really need your help here, huh?